Crestum Detoxify, deep clean toothpaste. Yeah, yeah. Crestum Detoxify, neutralize bacteria, even below the gum line. Yeah, it works.
Crest, healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Hey, good morning. It's Friday, September 11th. Today, we're skipping the headlines to air our full interview with Mayor Kennedy Stewart. We speak about what it would take to build new housing units that are accessible to folks on the street. Here's some background context. On Tuesday, the mayor called for a special council meeting scheduled for today at 1 p.m. to discuss a motion he put forward outlining emergency shelter options for unhoused folks. The motion calls for city staff to investigate options such as leasing more hotels, establishing a relief encampment on city land, and converting city-owned buildings into temporary emergency shelters. Last week, the mayor, along with Provincial Housing Minister Selena Robinson, announced that there would be almost 100 temporary modular housing units built for spring of 2021, and 350 permanent units after. The permanent units would have to go through regular engagement and development processes and could take anywhere from 3 to 6 years to be built. And for lots of folks, that's too late. There are around 400 tents at Strathcona Park now, which means anywhere from 400 to 800 residents at the park. And that's not counting the likely thousands more in shelters, RVs, couch surfing, and on the street. Here's Kennedy Stewart.
Mayor Kennedy Stewart, welcome to the show.
Hi, Macy. Nice to see you.
Kennedy, lots of folks, I'm sure, seeing this as welcome news, your announcement last week with the province and also your earlier announcement this week on Tuesday. I'm curious to hear about engagement and communication channels with the community through the summer. I've heard from lots of folks, both housed in Strathcona and unhoused, that they would have liked to see you around a little more and be able to speak with you. Could you speak a little more there about how we could maybe improve the communication channels?
Thanks very much for having me on today and talking about such an important topic. I think all of us in the city are finding the impacts of COVID are affecting us in different ways, personally, but also citywide. There have been a huge amount of impacts that are just starting to emerge. So in terms of talking with folks, we've been struggling with this in some ways because, of course, you know, Vancouver City Council is now all virtual that people can phone in. And that's been going pretty well. It took us a little while to get off the ground. And in some very rare instances, maybe have a backyard meeting. So, for example, that's what I did in Strathcona. I had a meeting with a number of homeowners, with the head of the business and improvement agency and other local folks that way. A constant communication with nonprofit organizations that are delivering all kinds of services, with the head of Vancouver Coastal Health in terms of health standards, right across the city, police. And then really my council just rose on July 29th. That was our last meeting, and that council week we maybe had we're in session for 45 hours, so that was a lot of time actually doing business of passing new laws and spending money and raising money, so that's really the way I've been attempting to get communicating with people. And on this motion, so I call a special council meeting for tomorrow, which we'll be having starting at 1 o'clock. The reason I did that is because a lot of us have been working on Strathcona Park in a more kind of more narrow context, but in terms of the explosion of homelessness in the city in a wider context. And I thought all of this needed to come to a public spot where we could put forward a proposal, which I've done, for people to begin the discussion on. So that's really my intention. And so those meetings are open. Folks are able to come in and say their piece, and council can ask questions. But I do think that's what city councils are for, is to have a forum for discussion and decision. And so that's the intention behind this motion. And already getting lots of input, but we'd like to see that formalized and so that everybody can see it at the same time. I think that's the key thing that's been missing, and that's what's going to happen starting Friday.
And it's great that there is a spot to begin discussion on this motion. And I'm curious too, because for so many of our unhoused residents, you know, internet is a problem. Lots of folks have access to devices and internet. Is there room for you and your fellow counselors to go down to Strathcona Tent City officially, maybe just yourself even, to have more discussions with folks?
Sure. And, you know, we've been in almost 2 years in council, and we've, you know, approached, talked to folks in a variety of ways. So there's a number of motions that Jean Swanson's brought forward, Councillor Swanson, Councillor Boyle, myself, other councillors, that, and we use the council as the place for that discussion. So the decision-making is transparent. I have talked to, of course, lots of folks in the past that are working or in Strathcona. And I do, in my own way, kind of make sure that I am keeping an eye on things by visiting locally. I found that sometimes I can make things worse rather than better. So this is why I thought I would move it to this formal space where we can actually make a decision on how we're not. And also, it's not just about Strathcona. I know that is the focus and the epicenter, but if you look at the West End, if you're in Chinatown, in Gastown, in Crosstown, I'm trying to actually move the discussion beyond. And what I don't like is that the focus on clearing parks. I don't actually think that's very useful, because we're in a really tough situation here that's much different than what we'd ever faced. And if I can just lay it out, is that we had our latest count, the snapshot of folks that are living without homes, that was in March, which I participated in, and we had about, you know, 550 people living rough in that count, with a total of about 2,000 people. However, I think those numbers have increased significantly. COVID-19 has forced physical distancing everywhere, our schools, universities, workplaces, but in shelters as well. And so we're seeing that shelters that would have a particular capacity are operating at a much reduced capacity, and those folks who would normally be in the shelters, we can't accommodate as many people. The same is with the single room occupancy hotels. There's about 7,000 of those rooms in the city, which is a huge amount. They usually have a guest policy where people can stay overnight. In many of those hotels now, that's been canceled. So folks that would normally stay, they're often not great living conditions, terrible in a lot of cases, but still it is a place. And now you can't have guests in many of these in these rooms, and so those folks are now also forced out into the street. The places where people would normally go through the day, often run by nonprofits, their funding is way down because the donations haven't been as plentiful. The programs that they operate to draw in revenue have ceased, and so a lot of those daytime places where people will go have closed down. Our community centers, for example, have been closed down.
Thank you, Mayor. And yeah. I mean, it's really valuable information, and I'm sure lots of listeners, I'm sure, experienced that.
Yeah.
And I just want to go back to the point about really engaging with the residents in Strathcona, because I think what I'm trying to convey here is that I'm hearing from many residents, especially the unhoused ones, that they would really love to see a little more of their mayor around, to feel like they have more of a relationship and direct communication, so that the populations can hear from them.
Sure, and I've had conversations in the past with Fiona York. I have talked to Chrissy Brad a couple of times. I mean, I have had conversations with folks that are doing great work down there. I think that they are really looking out for the folks that are living there. However, my job is also to move forward formal decisions. And I think now, and also to bring attention to the provincial and federal levels, that we need help. And that's what I'm doing. So last week we had an announcement of the 450 new units from the provincial government, but they're not coming fast enough. What we'll be doing is now council will be looking at the options that I've put forward, maybe adding some of their own, because we really need action here. Now, if the senior levels of government are not willing to put any more money in to help us, then the city has to look at doing that. And what I need is for us, council, and the public to understand is what are the costs associated with actually getting roofs over people's heads, which has to be the bottom line for all of us.
Thanks, Kennedy. And so I know people are happy to see action on this front.
Yep.
And I'm curious specifically about the partnership with BC Housing and other nonprofit providers. As I speak to community liaisons for the Strathcona Tent and Camper and the wider community, they tell me about the problems with supported housing, how problems such as surveillance of residents, fairly strong criteria required to gain admission to the supportive housing, and the no guest policy, which means that folks, many 85% of the overdose deaths, as you probably have heard in July, were indoors.
More than that, it keeps me up at night for sure.
And many of those overdose deaths were indoors. And so I'm seeing really a lot of issues with supported housing. And many of the announcement that you proposed on Tuesday, I saw a lot of that would be operated by BC Housing and nonprofit providers who would probably operate by those same standards and same operating protocols. So what is the solution to that? Making sure that we both have housing units, which is great, but also in a way that is accessible to street and trench folks.
Yes, I think that you raise good points there. And I do think we're making headway pre-COVID, but COVID, I mean, you think about how COVID affects you in your everyday life. It is affecting the whole city as a community. And like you say, the no guest policy, that's brand new. And so we're having not only an intensity of need, we have way more people that need this. We're also having, faced with less revenue at the city. So we have to kind of build this airplane as we fly it. So that's really the purpose of the council meeting is to, and I'm not limited to the three options I have there. We're getting exchanges now with councillors who have other ideas. And then the idea here is that we'll get the cost. And I think that that's an important part of it. Because, for example, one unit of permanent housing, when you factor in all the land costs, is about $250,000 a unit. And if you think city of Vancouver, the revenue stream you use the most, that we have most access to, is property taxes. If we increase property taxes by 1%, that really only gets us about $8 million. So you can see how limited our ability is to build the permanent housing and why I think we need to have realistic options put in place. But I do agree with you, barriers are a problem because the folks who are most need have the least amount of access. And I could hear alternatives for sure. If you're going to have partners that put in significant amounts of money like the provincial government, then you're also working to, to their stipulations. And so the provincial government delivers the money through BC Housing, and that's who we work with. I think they do an excellent job, but I do agree that all we could do better to accommodate people especially if they, to lower barriers to make sure folks feel comfortable where they are. And I would stress that culturally appropriate housing has been overlooked for many, many years. So we know, there's varying demographics, but we know that Indigenous people are highly overrepresented in the homeless population as well as in Strathcona Park. And so we need to make sure that the solutions we're bringing forward do reflect that and do have an open discussion about how these new sites, new facilities would be set up.
So what's the solution here, Kennedy? I'm putting you on the spot to answer a very difficult question.
Sure.
But, funding flowing, as you said, from our provincial partners with stipulations that may not work for our street and trench population. And here you are heading a municipal government at a municipal level and having to work cross with provincial agencies. What's the solution for making sure those criteria are changed or manageable?
The best we can do is make proposals. So, there is, so the city fully funded on their own the new Evelyn Saller building next to Oppenheimer Park, which is, close to where you are right now. That cost the city about $50 million. Now, that is really operated by us, but we can't do too many of those types of building on our own. We're not really fiscally empowered to do that. And it sounds like an excuse, but it's actually true. I mean, if you think $250,000 a unit, folks who pay the property tax are not going to accept 4 or 5% increases is what people normally accept. So we do have to work with senior levels of government, and they always have conditions on their funding. The best we can do is, I actually was talking to the federal housing minister today, who himself was a refugee and understands this very clearly, grew up in Toronto in government housing, is very aware of this, and to try to specifically design housing that has low barriers. But also, we have a lot of brain injured folks that are in the city. We're there are folks that have either through injury, through trauma, or for recovery from overdoses. It's really a used to be a quite small group of the homeless population, but it's now starting to increase. And we don't really have any housing for these folks. Very, very few who I would say are in the most need, especially if they have overlapping conditions.
That's a good way, Kennedy, for us to open up channels of consultation and communication with folks who are homeless or street entrenched and know what they need in order to move into housing. And these provincial agencies or federal agencies that often feel impenetrable.
Yeah, I actually feel the same way. I mean, for example, I've been negotiating with the federal government for 17 months to get 300 units of modular housing. And it's extremely frustrating. I've talked, you know, I was a parliamentarian for 7 years. I know my way around Ottawa well. It just seems like the federal government, although they've announced a lot of money to go into housing, it just hasn't been able to flow through. So I think I picked a very small number of units that are easily built on city land that's ready. Still, they still haven't been able to shake that money loose for us in a great time of need. However, the provincial government has altered their programs in order to us to expedite this. And I do follow, and I don't talk about this much, but I actually do. One way I learn is to actually follow specific cases, people that are in the system, people that are low barrier. I work with their teams to see how they move through the system and where the barriers are. And so that helps me. And I don't talk about this because I respect their privacy, but it's important for me to experience it through their eyes to see how they wound up where they did when they move into a particular form of housing, what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And so I guess I'm a social scientist, you know, that's how I was trained. That is a very important thing for me to do is to talk to people, but also to experience how they're moving through the system. So whether they have mental health challenges and wind up in hospitalization or police care, where do they go? How do they work through this current system and then try to work with the other agencies to change the policy that determines what the government agencies are doing, change that policy so it works better for folks? Because I agree, it's failing a lot of people.
Thanks, Kennedy. It'd be good for, I'm sure, a lot of folks to know that you follow some cases through the system.
Absolutely, yeah. How else am I going to learn, right? You know?
And I want to ask you about the funding, the money, because that's a complicated portion. I noticed in your motion, mm-hmm. the three options that you laid out. And at the very end, you said that the funding would be sought from provincial and federal government. And we all know that city governments really just don't have that much money.
Right.
But MLA Shane Simpson has said that the province's standpoint is that they do not support sanctioned encampments. So money doesn't seem likely to come from there. We see that the feds really don't prioritize BC when it comes to housing funding. We saw that earlier this week. So is this actually too optimistic that we're hoping that funding will come this way?
Well, that's not what I wanted to do with the motion. What I hope and council agrees with is that we actually need to understand, we have an idea of need and how many folks need immediate help, triage help, I think, as well as the conditions under which these folks need help. Like you've pointed out, there's different requirements of different people. Some people are easily housed, others need a lot of support and other services. So it's actually to get a handle on how much would it cost to, and I'm hoping like a per person costing, without the idea of who pays for it first, just kind of say, okay, and then we know how much all this costs. So how much are we as city council willing to put into this? And that's, I think, where the debate really, you know, it's money where your mouth is. How much are we willing to put in and how much can we put in? And we have this discussion publicly so the city, the folks who live in the city know our fiscal situation, know what we'd have to sacrifice. So, for example, if we were going to buy hotels, we wouldn't have enough money to do that. So we'd have to cancel other projects. So maybe we don't build a community center. Maybe we don't redo the Granville Street Bridge. Maybe there are things that we're currently working on that we have to cancel in order to move forward with this. And I think if that's something that council decided they were going to do, we have to be very transparent about it because there's a lot of work has gone into these other projects. But it does give folks a sense. And then it also gives the federal and provincial governments an idea of how much they would have to contribute. What we may find if nobody else comes to the table, that we're in a pretty desperate situation here and we're going to have to contemplate options we've never contemplated before because of COVID. And I heard the health minister today say we're in this for at least another year. So we can't have more and more and more folks living on the street and in the worst conditions through in unsafe conditions, unhealthy conditions. This is not something that just has come to me. This is something we've been in deep conversation about with mayors across Canada and around the world since COVID started. The cities are feeling kind of abandoned in some ways. Is that we've had lots of direct help from the federal government. We have a little bit of money coming in to help, but really all the COVID, a lot of the fallout lands in cities. The high unemployment rates, homelessness, it's like, and actually what's strange for Vancouver is we really haven't had a kind of economic situation like we're having right now. We haven't had a recession in Vancouver really since the 80s. So it's also shocking for a lot of middle class or folks that are trying to be in the middle class who are now finding they can't pay their rents. They're finding they can't pay their mortgages. They've lost a job or two folks in the family have lost their job and they're really scared about falling out of their housing situation and onto the street. So it has to be all the government involved, but we have to put the proposal forward. And that's what I'm hoping to do on Friday.
I'm really interested. I'm sure many people are interested to see what kind of difficult trade-offs we end up having to make. Mm-hmm. I want to switch a little bit here, but bear with me. I want to talk a little bit about wording in the press release you put out on Tuesday. In the press release, you talked a lot about generosity and compassion, which I'm sure are values that many Vancouverites hold. But I'm curious if it's also time for us to put in these kinds of news releases words. Terms that are probably a little uncomfortable, things like structural racism, colonization sure. being the root causes of many things like yep. homelessness, because compassion is one thing, but also deep understanding among Vancouverites that there are structural issues to all these two big issues like homelessness. And as the moral leadership for the city, which I'm sure you're doing your best every day to try yep. and really uphold, is it time to put that kind of wording in?
Well, I believe the language about the vestiges of colonial residential schools is in the whereases of the motions. So there is a deep recognition of the unequal impacts this is having on particularly Indigenous people. So that is in this motion. It needs to be part of the discussion. But like my motion to abolish street checks, that is in there. And of course, I've said very publicly about the systemic racism that exists in all institutions, including policing. So I have been trying to raise this issue. I feel it's my duty to do it because it exists. And then more than to call it out is to try to remedy it. So that is part of the work I've been doing actively. But I realize that COVID is affecting people unequally as well, and we are seeing this. And just spending so much time in Ottawa, the overwhelming impetus of federal governments is to kind of protect the middle class. And I do think that often folks that are not in those income brackets, those households are really kind of second thought. I mean, that's why I ran with Jack Layton and the NDP was because those are the values that I want to bring here, and I'm trying to. But change is hard, and it's hard for people to look at themselves and say, yeah, though I'm in a system that's racist. But it's not hard for me in city council because I look at our council and it's predominantly white. That's a vestige of colonial past. That's power that's in the hands of one's particular group.
And probably my second last question, Kendi, I want sure. to talk about safe supply or safer right. supply, because it's the root cause of many things.
Absolutely.
And that's not under municipal jurisdiction as well. And so what is within your power and council's power to move on that?
Yeah, that was really one of the first actions we took as council in December, was to have this overdose task force. I mean, it is unconscionable that we're having basically a person die a day of overdoses, and it's a completely preventable thing. I've been bringing, the first conversation I had with the Prime Minister when I was mayor was to talk about safe supply. If you see now, you never heard it in his language before, but you saw when he came to British Columbia, he was talking about safe supply, which is great. I really fought during the COVID early on with all the national mayors to get federal health exemptions, which we were able to get. And then the province came in with its COVID guidelines, which is starting safe supply. There's a lot of doctors who are reluctant to kind of get in and help here, but there's a fantastic crew of doctors around the downtown east side are doing it. So what can I do? I can be definitely a voice for this nationally, which I've been really trying to do. Also to put money into it. I mean, the city council, people don't know know this, we put a half a percentage point directly into overdose prevention programs. So that is about $4 million a year, plus all the fire department programs. So we have now, we have a special program at the fire department where there's follow-up after overdose. We have actual follow-up where a couple of members of the fire department will follow up, very trusted members of the community. So that's kind of what the city can do. They can facilitate that. But in terms of regulation change, that is provincial and federal. One thing that I do think we need to explore is that Canada would have its own supply of legal heroin. And that is something that I've been working on with a group of folks as well, is that we need to provide heroin on prescription is very expensive because it's imported. If we had a domestic supply, that would really help. And that is something I'm actively working on. We may pass resolutions in council to help with that. But at this point, there's a lot you can do with your voice as mayor. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Last question, Kennedy. With homelessness and unhoused residents, what's your vision of success here? At what point would you say, okay, this is good, we've done our job? And what's the timeline around that?
I think it's just changed radically over the last 6 months. I do think we were starting to see a slight decline in homelessness in the city under normal conditions, and that's really from unprecedented investment from the provincial government, who really decided, for example, with modular homes. A lot of people don't know this, but since this provincial government came to power, they've provided funding in partnership with the city for up to 1,500 units of new housing. That's a lot. That's a historic level that's been done in about 3 years. So that is the only answer, is to get housing, but you need partners to do it. So my vision was to keep working with the senior levels to get as much housing as we could for folks that are really, living on shelter level rates of income or slightly higher than that. But COVID has just blown that out of the water. We have now approval for a new batch of modular housing, about 100 units that won't be ready till spring. That's not fast enough now. We're in a triage situation where we have to get folks off the street and into better than tents. And I think sometimes community-based, but sometimes very unsafe situations. So Strathcona is kind of, folks say that it's, often say it's a wonderful place to live, but for a lot of people it isn't. And so people need options, and that's what we're trying to provide in this Friday motion.
Kennedy, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for your interest in this. It's really important that we talk about this, and I will take away what you've said about, how can I more meaningfully engage and really put my head to how we can do that, while at the same time continuing to do all the other stuff I have to do. So, but thanks a lot for what you're doing.
Mayor, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was Mayor Kennedy Stewart. We talked about what it would take to build new housing units that are accessible to folks on the street. Thanks for listening. It's The Pulse on CFRO, where your independent Vancouver news show here on CFRO 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy. And if you haven't already, subscribe to our podcast. Just search for The Pulse on CFRO wherever you get your podcasts. Take care.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
After my heart attack, cash from Active Care meant I had choices.
When I had cancer, cash from Active Care meant I didn't need to stress so much about money.
What is Active Care? Active Care is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. If you're diagnosed with cancer, a heart attack, or stroke, you could end up paying thousands of dollars or more in out-of-pocket medical bills. Active Care gives you protection at an affordable price. So, get Active Care for cash, choice, and control. Active Care is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Visit colonialpenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit colonialpenn.com.
At Bromwich & Smith, we hope you haven't heard of us, because we hope you haven't had to deal with mounting debt. But if you are starting to feel debt's pressure, our hope is to provide you with hope. Bromwich & Smith is a licensed insolvency trustee committed to providing debt relief. To learn about consumer proposals, a flexible, federally protected alternative to bankruptcy, visit bromwichandsmith.com, spelled B-R-O-M-W-I-C-H and smith.com.